The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hi, this is Kevin McCullough. Thanks for listening to the Christian Outlook podcast, where we cover today's issues from a perspective that honors your Christian faith. Our podcast is brought to you through a partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy and ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom. Here's another piece I trust you'll enjoy.
Now, you've probably heard of this phenomenon, the seven-year itch. Well, my next guest says, these days, it seems to happen a little sooner than 7 years. This is the period after which satisfaction in marriage declines. At least that's the theory. Disappointments embed, resentments entrench, separations occur, divorces happen. Marriages need real help. Well, in his best-selling book, When Sinners Say I Do, Pastor Dave Harvey, he helped engaged and newlywed couples understand the significance and opportunities of marrying another sinner. Sorry, that's all that's out there. 10 years after its release, he and his wife, Kim, celebrated their 35th wedding anniversary. Well, that milestone prompted him to reflect upon the feedback he had received about the first book and his 35 years of marriage. Well, specifically, he began to consider the specific things that move people beyond that 7-year itch period, if you will, and help marriages last a lifetime. Well, this brought to focus some important questions as marriages grow and age. What defining moments do they experience? What are the unique points of trouble and transformation that visit us as our marriages mature? And as we navigate the realities of job and financial challenges, keep our heads above water in the kiddie years, raise teenagers or adult children, empty the nest, suffer, age, or prepare for final goodbyes, what moments define a durable marriage? The result? I Still Do, Growing Closer and Stronger Through Life's Defining Moments. It represents his answers to those questions and many others. Lasting marriages are built one defining moment at a time. Well, Dr. Dave Harvey serves as the president of Great Commission Collective, a church planting ministry in the U.S., Canada, and abroad. He founded AmICalled.com, pastored for 33 years, serves on the board of CCEF, and travels widely across networks and denominations as a popular conference speaker. He is the author of When Sinners Say I Do, Am I Called and Rescuing Ambition, and co-author of Letting Go, Rugged Love for Wayward Souls. He and his wife, Kim, they have 4 kids and 4 grandchildren. They live in Southwest Florida, but for right now, he is all ours as we talk by phone about his latest book, I Still Do, Growing Closer and Stronger Through Life's Defining Moments. Dave Harvey, thank you so much for joining us.
Georgine, thanks for inviting me to join you.
So 35 years, is that where you stand at this moment?
Actually, it's 37. The bio was written at 35.
Well, my husband and I are at 37 as well. We're looking forward to 28 in May. So I appreciate that longevity, and it gives you some real insight and credibility in encouraging us to sort of rest on this notion of saying, I do. Now, can you define for us life-defining moments? What does that mean? Those events in life that obviously have an impact, but how does that impact our marriage, or at least our effort to stand firm on I do during those seasons?
Yeah, I'm defining that term, defining moments, by just talking about those experiences, events, or maybe even decisions that ultimately determine your direction. So it has a few different components. One is that it presents a decision for truth. It requires a cost. It offers an opportunity. Ultimately, it grows the soul and sets us on the course for a new direction. And so there's about 9 different ones in the book, and they represent, each one of them represents a chapter.
Now, if I'm married for a decade, 2 decades, and a few of those life-defining moments have come and gone, and we've made poor decisions. Is our marriage salvageable? Does your book help us reflect back on those choices and help us alter our course so that we can, when we reach our 37th year, still say I do?
Oh, yes. Actually, the last chapter, the final chapter of the book is titled When Grace Conquers the Moments You've Wasted. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, kind of acknowledging the reality of the fact that we've all made mistakes. Nobody is perfect. Well, Jesus is the only perfect person, and the rest of us are just kind of failing and doing the best as we go and experiencing the grace of God. And so I wanted to offer hope, because I think after,
yes,
you know, if folks are anything like me, after they read a marriage book, they're thinking about, oh, my goodness, I've got all these areas I need to improve. And yet it's not, it's ultimately the grace of God at work within us.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, as I mentioned, you are the author of When Sinners Say I Do. What a great title that really defines what a life of marriage is, the challenge that we have in living together under the grace of God. Is this a book that is a sequel? Is it for those who have been married for many seasons like you and I, or for those who are just starting out? Who is your intended audience?
Well, the audience, people that have been married for more than a few years. You know, you were talking earlier about the 7-year itch. I think that's actually been moved up nowadays to 4 or 5 years. And most of the divorces are taking place around then. And so I really wanted to be able to write something that gave folks a vision as they look forward to understanding what are the events, what are the moments, what are the experiences where marriages tend to veer off in one direction or another. And I wanted to give words to that and hope in that. And so, you know, with Kim and I just celebrating our 37th anniversary, you know, we realized there were times for us where we just didn't know what to do. We felt like we were coming through an important moment, but the path wasn't always clear. And so, you know, the book really represents an attempt to answer the question of as we've got through those moments, like, man, it would have really been nice to know these things sooner. And so that's what I wanted to write about.
You know, I so appreciate this because it does give a hopeful roadmap. These are some of the challenges we're going to face. How do I navigate them? How do I anticipate them? And or you might find that you're right in the middle of one, and it gives you insight and hope. This is how we move through it. So I commend you for that. It's very practical and helps kind of think through. This is typical of a marriage. These are the challenges that everybody faces, and giving, again, some direction on how to move forward. Well, let's talk about life-defining moments. Give us a few that are important. Well, they're all important, but give us a few of the bigger life-defining moments that you cover in your chapters.
So one of the first chapters is when you discover brokenness is broader than sin. So, you know, my first book was When Sinners Say I Do, mm-hmm. and it's kind of built around this idea that until sin be bitter, Christ will not be sweet, and marriage will not be sweet either. But I wanted to also explore some of the other influences that make up brokenness, and that because it's important that we understand each other, and we understand some of the ways that we've been influenced by the past and by family and the things like that have shaped us. There's a chapter on the moment of blame, a chapter on the moment of weakness, a chapter on when you realize family can't replace the church. There's one on when your spouse suffers. You know, I read a lot of books. There's some amazing books out there about how Christians suffer and how God uses suffering. But I wanted to write something specifically about how do we deal with our spouse suffering? Because, I mean, Georgine, you know as well as I do, you stay married long enough and one of you will suffer. And how we respond to that, how we respond when our spouse suffers, says a lot about our true beliefs about God and our true expectations for marriage. And so I wanted to be able to explore that and help couples that, because inevitably one of them is going to suffer.
Well, these, again, are such wonderful chapters. When you first get married and things are so rosy, it's hard to even think about those kinds of things that are inevitably going to be down the road, the challenges that we will face. And this helps us to anticipate and also see that what we are experiencing is typical. It's common among those who have made a commitment of marriage. Let's talk about this one chapter in the first part of the book. And I should mention that you've divided the book into three sections. The first, starting together, sticking together, and then ending together. This chapter on the moment of blame. That seems to be a major issue. We know that there will be disagreements, but pointing the finger at the person with whom you disagree can be a habit that's difficult to break because, quite frankly, I'm always right in my marriage, and I don't know why my husband doesn't see that. Can you talk a little bit about that moment of blame?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. I think that you know, when we look at Genesis 3 and we see how Adam, the man throws the woman under the bus, and as God calls him to account, he says, "It was the woman you gave me, Lord." That's not just an incident, but there's something about the nature and character of sin itself, and in that it's always trying to mask itself. It's always trying to run undercover. It's always seeking to deflect responsibility and culpability. And I realized just in my marriage, in the times where I feel like I feel convicted of sin, or I've failed, or I'm weak in some way and I need to apologize, man, it's just so hard. And it takes the grace of God to be able to do it. And so the moment of blame represents those times where God is convicting us, or we become aware of weakness, and we deal in those moments with that strong temptation to displace responsibility, to put it back on our spouse, to put it back on anything else but me.
It's interesting, over the 37 years that we have been married, that ability to disagree without blaming, and to even find some humor in when we discover I am the one who's at fault. I mean, it's rare that I discover that, but when it's discovered that I'm the one at fault, to be able to let go of that earlier, it's not always that acute, no, you're to blame, and that struggle. But over time, some of these things that are very difficult and challenging in the beginning become easier. And it's just a wonderful thing to anticipate what's coming and to know that it's not always going to be the kind of challenge that really challenges the commitment that we've made to one another.
Yeah, the benefit of talking about it and even, you know, writing about it is that it kind of normalizes the experience. Everybody encounters this. Nobody is above this.
Yeah.
The ground is level, and we're all tempted in a familiar way when it comes to the need to acknowledge weaknesses or sins or areas where we're not as strong as another person. And yet there's so much forward progress that comes when we're able to not simply acknowledge, but to, you know, to confess or to ask for help.
Yeah, absolutely. You have a chapter on when your spouse suffers. My husband and I were married for about 5 years when he had a major heart issue. And I remember having the conversation that he might not survive the surgery, the open heart surgery that was required. He did survive that and the three that followed. But it can be a challenge. You don't anticipate when you're young people starting out, or even when you're in the middle of your married years, that's a possibility. Why did you include that chapter? And I was so happy to see that you did, because it so often happens and we completely are taken by surprise.
Yeah, I was just saying, I think that oftentimes writing on suffering is addressed directly to the believer, which is really helpful, but not often directed to how do we help somebody that is dear to us and that we love, and how do we care for them, and how do we walk alongside of them in helpful and constructive ways. And I've had this displayed for me. We have good friends that his name is Lee. He was recently, well, like 2 years ago, he was diagnosed with ALS.
Mm.
And we've walked alongside this couple from the point where Lee and Rhonda were hiking together to the point where they were walking together. And then Lee is on a cane, and then Lee is in a walker, and now Lee is bound to a wheelchair. And yet, Georgine, we have just watched them both care for each other, and watched his wife, Rhonda, basically put on a clinic as his health deteriorates of how to love and care and walk alongside of her husband. Because, you know, barring some miracle, this always just goes in one direction. You don't recover from this. And yet there's a courage and a grace that they both display. And it makes such a statement about their marriage, about their relationship with Jesus, and how they're caring for one another and loving one another. And they inspired me to write that chapter.
Well, in fact, that's one of the things I would say. It gives married couples something to aspire to see that it's possible to retain a love for one another through these very challenging seasons. So I really commend you for including that in the book. I'm not sure most books on marriage include that kind of a topic. So I found that especially refreshing, and I think it will be very helpful. You also have a chapter on sex as a defining moment. First of all, explain how that's a defining moment, and then another chapter on how that changes over time.
Yeah, it's a defining moment because we all bring expectations for what our sexuality is supposed to be in marriage, and yet those expectations sometimes aren't aligned with each other. In fact, I started the chapter out by talking about this time and that I was sitting in Starbucks, and this older gentleman, I mean, he had to be at least 70 years old, was talking to somebody else, and he was talking so loud that all of Starbucks could hear him. And
oh, dear.
He was talking about how his wife should feel obligated to give him sex every day. And this dude was quite passionate over the loss of his entitlements. And, I just sat there thinking, yeah, well, my first thought was, what kind of vitamins does this guy take? But actually, my second thought was, isn't that the way things are? If you don't adapt together to the changes in life, to the changes of seasons, to the changes of body, then you just end up having the same expectations that you did when you're newlyweds. And, it illustrated for me that the sum of our marriage is, I guess, greater than the use of our parts.
You might also want to include a chapter on how to have a private conversation with your voice down.
Yeah. And I think how we deal with that aging becomes a defining moment.
Yeah. One of the defining moments I think most married couples anticipate is when the kids leave. Talk about how this becomes a defining moment and how it's important that married couples prepare for and anticipate the empty nest season. And so often, if they don't, find that they have very little in common to keep them together.
Yeah, you get married to one another, and then the kids come, and the parenting creates a cause that allows you to tolerate a lot of marriage dysfunction. You're united by the task of parenting and by all the claims and all the challenges that demands of you. But the weaknesses of one's marriage can hit almost like a tsunami after the kids leave. I mean, I know a couple. They raise an entire family and three or four kids, and the kids left around the same period of time. This man retired around the same period of time the kids left, and they looked at one another and realized they don't really have anything connecting them, anything that binds them anymore. And this is one of those wonderful stories where they realized that, they realized where they were, they immediately got help, they had to separate for a little while. But now fast forward 4 years later, and God has just done an amazing thing where he's reunited them in love for each other, and they're now helping other married couples get through the same kind of thing. And so, it was through experiences of walking alongside of folks like that that I realized, oh, no, this is a defining moment when the kids leave.
Yeah, absolutely. You have a chapter on closure, and it can be overrated, but what is closure as you're using the word, and how does that impact a marriage as a life-defining moment, or the absence of closure? How does that impact a marriage?
Yeah, it's a defining moment when you realize that God doesn't resolve all of the pain and all of the complexities in life in a fallen world, that life comes without closure sometimes, that situations, complexities in relationship, that a fallen world makes life open-ended, and all of our pain is not necessarily resolved. And so, I was reading a biography on A.W. Tozer, and a guy named Lyle Dorset wrote a biography, and like many people, I love Tozer. I'm inspired by his writing. He's a man of spectacular faith. But according to Dorset's biography, his neglect of his marriage and his family was pretty profound. He traveled extensively, left his wife Ada alone, neglected her material needs, and he eventually died. She was remarried. And she was quoted once as saying, I've never been happier in my life. Aiden, that's the A in A-W, Aiden loved Jesus, but Leonard, that was her new husband, Leonard loves me. And so you just think about that. How does a wife make sense of that? How do we make sense of it? Ada was married to a man who was a spiritual giant, but he probably loved, you know, ministry maybe better than her or whatever. And then he dies, and she has to move forward in life, not knowing how to interpret it. The inconsistencies of that are never really resolved for her. There was no aha moment, no interpretation, no closure. And so, you know, we have to be able to experience God in those moments and recognize that, yeah, sometimes in the providence of God and the wisdom of God, he doesn't tie it all in a neat bow. But we have closure in the past through the cross of Jesus Christ and his resurrection. And we have closure coming in the future as we anticipate Christ and as we anticipate going to heaven. And sometimes right now we have to live between those tensions in a fallen world.
Yeah. Well, I love that the final chapter is titled When Grace Conquers Your Wasted Moments, The Death of Ivan Ilyich, which is an interesting connection. I wish we had more time, but I do want to suggest that I Still Do is a great resource to anticipate the challenges that marriage will bring and to stay together, growing closer and stronger through life's defining moments, published by Baker Books. Thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, Georgie.
Thanks for listening to Christian Outlook. I'd like to talk to you for a moment about ADF, the Alliance Defending Freedom. You've seen how your freedom is under attack. But if you act now, you can protect your family today and for generations to come. Go to ChristianOutlook.com to find out how you can join Alliance Defending Freedom to help ensure that the opponents of freedom don't dictate your future. That's ChristianOutlook.com. If you enjoy our podcast, take a moment and tell a friend to subscribe today.